and welcome to How Fitting, the podcast for fashion designers and entrepreneurs about creating clothing and growing a business that fits your customer, lifestyle, and values. I'm your host, Allison Haynes. Before we get started, do you want to get your designs to production without compromising your brand's fit, vision, or values? My pattern making services are tailored to help women's wear slow fashion brands do just that. You can learn more and book a free introduction call at howfittingpatterns.com to see if we'd be a good fit to work together. Now on to the episode.
Today I'm joined again by Laura Briggs of The Shortlist, and Laura was my guest way back in March 2022 on episode 37, and I invited her back today to talk about how she's grown her business in these past 2 years. So welcome back to How Fitting, Laura.
Thanks so much for having me. It's nice to be back.
Yeah, I'm so excited. So for those of you who maybe haven't listened to the previous episode and are meeting you for the first time, can you share a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yes, so my name's Laura and I run a brand called The Shortlist. It's exclusively petite fashion, and I guess what my sort of unique selling point is that I've got absolutely no background in fashion or design whatsoever. Just, I would say, about 20 years of being really frustrated by petite fashion that's driven me to do this. And yeah, my brand's going to be 3 years old this year. And yeah.
Exciting. Yeah, and congrats on 3 years.
I know, it feels like a long 3 years. So much has happened. I'm sure business years aren't the same as normal years.
Yeah, especially when you're, because you normally launch 2 collections a year, is that right?
That's right. My first six months, I launched 3 collections. And then since then, I've done a spring, summer, and an autumn, winter.
Okay. So yeah, it's 3 years, but you've done 6, 7, 8 collections at this point. So
yeah,
I feel like fashion kind of runs in seasons versus years.
Yeah, definitely. And it's certainly working for me so far. Like, just doing it all on my own to do 2 collections a year is quite, you know, it's enough to get your head around.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, what has kind of business been like these past 2 years? I know there's kind of been a lot of changes behind the scenes and things you've learned, but kind of big picture, how has the past 2 years been?
It's been great. It's crazy, when I was working out where I was, because we spoke in March 2022, and at that point you were asking me about how I was going to bring my prices down, and I wasn't able to say at that point that I was moving my manufacturer to Poland. It was a big secret. And obviously I've done that, and it did bring my prices down. I sold lots more things, my profit margins were better, and so now I'm sitting here at a stage where my business is growing really quickly and much more profitable and just feeling a lot more settled and established. So it's really nice. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's such like a huge thing, like working out the profit margins, getting it just right where you still have enough budget to make the quality like premium pieces you want to, but not making them so unaffordable for the customer or unsustainable on the business end for you to continue making. So yeah, kind of what went into switching your production from the UK to Poland? Like, I'm sure that was a long involved process. So what was behind that move?
It was. I don't think I was totally candid about this at the time, because it wasn't until I revealed it that I spoke about the true backstory. But at the end of 2021, so I've been trading for about 6 months, and I was making in the UK, and every single collection, even though it was selling out, was losing money. And I just got to the point where I thought, unless I do something drastic, the business just can't continue. So it was a kind of make or break move. But yeah, I moved to Poland, and I think it actually made it easier because I felt like I had nothing to lose. So yeah, I found a family-run factory in Poland and started making with them. And actually, I was really lucky that it all went pretty smoothly. Like, their workmanship was good. Everything shipped on time. I launched on time. And then I've been working with them ever since, exclusively. And it's been great. It's just completely changed the structure of the business. I think that you accept that part of the early stages of running a fashion brand is going to be working out, you know, all the little bits that fit together and, you know, losing money at the start, but as long as you're seeing that progress and you're seeing each little incremental thing that takes you in the right direction. And now I'm seeing all of that come together, and I've got, you know, my collections draw net profit now, and I'm able to start thinking about the next stages of scaling. So it's all been worth it, but it's just been sort of consistent head down hard work. It's not been any like massive eureka moments. It's pretty unsexy stuff, but it's got me where I am now.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like the secret behind fashion. It's so glamorous on the outside, and then if you're in it, you're like, this is it's a lot of work and carrying rolls of fabric and, you know, arms full of orders you're shipping out, or like whatever you're doing. It's very scrappy on the back end of
scrappy
things.
That's such a good word for it. That's exactly how it feels.
Well, congratulations on, like, I feel like that's like everybody's dream of finding a factory and having it go smoothly and just it all, you know, seeing the hard work pay off. How did you find this factory? Because I think that's another thing that a lot of brands, like, they want to find that partnership that works out so well, but it's difficult sometimes to find.
Yeah, I've got no, like, shortcut. I think I was on Google for about 6 days straight. And it's difficult because, you know, these small, there are loads of, take Poland as an example, there are loads of fantastic manufacturers in Poland, but they're not enabled for sort of an English person on Google sort of typing in, you know, manufacturers. So it was a bit of a chain, like diving through lots of different websites and eventually finding a few names and putting a few emails out. But it's one of the, I think it's like so much of starting a business, you just have to be prepared to go, I'm just going to go and find out, I'm going to do some digging around, and, you know, have faith that you're going to find something.
Yeah, so did you go visit the factory then before you started working together, or what did kind of the process look like?
Yeah, so I'd done all of my pattern cutting for my new collection with my factory in the UK. So I was able to send all of that straight to Poland, and they got on with the fittings. And then I said that for that first fitting session, I wanted to go over there and meet them. So I went with my fiance. It's quite nerve-wracking actually, but it's really nice. They put on a proper meeting for us. We tried on all the pieces. We were literally there with, because they didn't speak English and we didn't speak Polish, so we were literally there with a Google Translate on our phone, just having this conversation, and everyone was really nice. I just feel like I landed on my feet, but so many of these factories are willing to work with you and, you know, do what it takes to sort of make you happy as the client. And that's definitely what I found. They were very hospitable.
Nice. Yeah, that's fun to be able to go kind of see the factory, meet the people, even if you're having to communicate through your phone, and try, like, see the pieces ahead of time and not just be like, oh no, hopefully they get here.
I think it just helps that relationship if everybody's seen each other and you're able to express yourself so much better and show that you really care about your brand and that you're a serious client. And I really feel like that set the foundations for now. Well, I've been working with them for 2 years now. It's been great.
Yeah. So what does the process look like for designing a new collection for you now? Like, are you still working? Are you doing kind of everything, pattern making, design? You know, what pieces are you doing versus this factory is doing? And is there anyone else that you kind of work with on your team, either like in-house
it's interesting,
or contract?
Yeah, no, it's interesting that you asked that, because I'm at a stage of looking into doing it a slightly different way. So I've recently started work just at the end of last year, started working with a consultant. And one of the things I said to her was, the bit that I'm struggling with is, as you would expect, me not coming from a design background, it is the design element that I feel like I need the most support on. So she's worked with me on the last couple of collections on range building. And it's been quite straightforward because I've done so many existing lines that it's looking at the ones that are most popular with my customer and then tweaking them and adapting them. And that's been honestly so good because it's been quite cost efficient in terms of sampling and things, but I've been able to look at all the feedback that I've had about fit, for example. Take my best-selling dress, my knit dress, that just flies. But then the first time I did it, I looked at all the feedback and I went, I could make the sleeves slightly shorter, I could streamline the silhouette. And so when I relaunched it last season, I think returns are like 9% for that dress. So it's just really worked. And so we sit down together and we build the range. And then I work with a designer to put together some images for me, tech packs, and then those go to the factory. And I've been working with them for so long that they know the fit that I want on things. So they have sort of the base size of things. They know how I want things graded, and it's all relatively smooth from there. But I'm looking into changing and working with more of a creative director who's going to look at more trends and ways that we can branch out and do some slightly more innovative things, because I think it's got to be a balance of doing the things that, you know, your customers know the shortlist is really great for that, and I trust their fit and I trust their, you know, the textiles that they use, but then also doing some things that surprise them, you know, and they're willing to try some new things because they trust you as a brand. So I just need a bit more guidance on that and want to make sure I get that balance right of newness and, you know, things that people know and love.
Yeah, I was just talking about this with someone else recently of it seems in brands, it's like you want to be creative and try something new, and that's what kind of brings new people into, you know, visit your website, you know, get to know your brand because they see like somebody wearing this cool piece or see the photo on social media or even in print magazines or however you're marketing. And then, you know, so the newness is like what brings people in often, but then they like leave with the black t-shirt, you know, they just like the boring staple where it's like that's kind of the bread and butter that pays the bills. But then if you only have that, it's hard to kind of have a personality and like be distinct amongst all the other fashion brands. I mean, you have kind of the fit aspect too, which is, you know, unique to your brand as well. So you're not like competing with every fashion brand, but yeah, there's that balance of like doing something new, but not so unfamiliar that people are not quite sure like what to do with it or how it fits in their wardrobe. So.
Yeah, definitely. And even things like I'm working on my autumn winter 24 range at the moment. And, you know, I'm saying to myself, look, I know they love my knits and so far, they love the cut of this knit dress that I've brought out, but I want to try a new silhouette of knit dress that maybe is slightly less fitted. And it feels like a risk, but as long as it's sort of, you know, a considered risk and it still feels like, you know, there will be people who don't want the more fitted silhouette. So even though it does really well, you've got to think about the whole spectrum of customers that you're working for. So yes, it's getting the balance right, isn't it?
Yeah. So that's kind of one of the things I wanted to ask about was are there any kind of big picture insights or really detailed feedback that you've gotten now that you have kind of more sales data to be able to look at what your customer likes and dislikes?
Yeah, my customer is, I would say, first of all, it's a way broader audience than I expected when I set out. And I'm actually doing a little bit of work. Well, so I set out with me in mind because it was based on my experience. So it was a 30 something year old petite woman who was just starting to come into a bit more money but wasn't finding there was enough choice for her when it came to shopping for clothes. But I'm actually finding that I've got a really broad age range that goes from 20s right up to women in their 60s. And so I'm doing a piece of work on the website's being redesigned at the moment and making sure that all of my language is bearing that in mind. So just the angle of things, but it's the same with the pieces themselves. They're quite classic in their preferences. They like things that are very easy to wear. They like more muted and sort of jewel tones in their colors. So I've been relatively cautious with color palettes and things so far, and then trying to sprinkle in the right amount of sort of more innovative styles, prints. So for example, this upcoming season I'm doing a few more puffed sleeves, but nothing too outlandish. My consultant was talking to me about, for example, doing bows and things like that, but I think that my customer is a little bit more traditional in her style, so it's making sure that I have things that are exciting to her but still feel like she's, you know, they don't feel too outlandish or that she's not brave enough to try them out.
Or, yeah, too trendy, it sounds like it isn't really your customer. Like, sounds like they prefer something that will be in style and they can keep for years versus, I feel like bows are, they're classic, but they're having a trend moment right now. You know, they're a little bit more, of today.
Like, yeah, they are. They're a bit of a fad. And I do understand it because my pieces are expensive, and so a woman wants to look at that piece and go, how much wear can I get out of it? And for example, with my knits, they're a timeless cut. They're a beautiful fabric that holds its shape. They're really flattering, and you can wear that every single year. Mm-hmm. This season, I'm also changing a little bit because I feel like historically I've done lots of occasion wear, and I'm thinking more about my customer and also the way that I buy clothes. And if you're spending £200 on a dress, you want as many opportunities to wear it as possible. So this season, I'm leaning more into casual and versatile dresses that still have the elevated touches that make it feel really special. So, you know, if you think about your everyday summer smock dress that's really comfortable and you can throw it on and it looks lovely, but it's got all the little thoughtful details. Even thinking about things like pockets, little pleats.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's what I want in an everyday dress. Like, I'm not going to run around and not have a place to put my phone or whatever else.
Exactly. Like, it's always the really small things. Like, even, like, don't know, like, I've bought dresses online where they've got elastication, like, around the elbow if they've got a shorter sleeve. And that elastication is just, like, a bit loose and it feels a bit, like, unfinished. And I have to make sure that mine's like not too loose, not too tight. What's it actually doing? If you're wearing that dress, how does it feel? So it's really making sure that there's nothing that my customers could put on a dress and go, I love it. It's just a shame about this feature, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. My pet peeve with the elastic sleeves is when they end up right, like, in the crease of your elbow. Like, when you raise your arm or something, then the elastic is, like, right in your elbow. And it's like, not below, but not above your elbow. And it's just, like, this annoying middle ground.
Yeah, you've got to know how she's going to wear that piece. And what, you know, I've got so much experience of it because I am my customer, really. So it's been really good fun. And it's a very different collection that I'm bringing out. And I hope it's going to be really popular.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it when it does. On the note of you being your customer, do you feel like, you know, I'm sure there are many advantages to being your customer in, you know, how you design and fittings and everything. Is there ever, do you think, like, a disadvantage to being your own customer?
I don't think so, because I think it's so much easier to put yourself in her shoes. But I do have to think that it's like broad spectrum that I'm not making for myself personally. So I can think about the way that I shop and the kind of pieces that I want to wear. But when it comes down to things like color, for example, it's not my personal taste that I have to think about. And I, every season, do check in with things like polls, and I'll have my own ideas of what I think. And then I kind of get a bigger picture idea of what everybody else would like. But more often than not, it comes down to my gut feeling. And I think I've just done enough collections now to know when it's worth taking a risk and when you want to do something quite safe. But for the most part, I seem to have been getting my decisions right. So perhaps that's why I'm trusting myself more now.
Yeah, that's good. And I do think there's a lot of, like, trusting your gut. You know, there's a reason why you have the experience of your customer for the most part, and yeah, there's a reason why you may feel a certain way about something and be like, I don't know, it doesn't seem right, or this seems like the perfect thing, I'm gonna go for it. Because it's sometimes those polarizing styles and pieces or colors that are the most popular. Like, they may not be popular with everybody, but, like, the people who like it love it, you know?
Absolutely. That's like, yeah, no, it's true. And I also think that In the opposite direction, because people have started to trust me so much now, because they've bought enough times, if I bring something out, they'd probably be more likely to try it than they would with another brand, because I've had such a good experience with shortlist pieces, it might be worth testing out a new style that I wouldn't normally have gone for.
Yeah, that's a great point. And so cool that you've, like, built up that trust with your customers where they are willing to, like, experiment more. So that brings up another question, like, what percentage would you say, kind of off the top of your head, are your customers, like, repeat customers versus new customers?
It's really high, actually. It's about 56%. I say about, I know that number. 56% of my customers are repeat, and
That's amazing.
Just over 40% are multiple repeat, which is really good. It's, yeah. The loyalty is amazing. I'm going to be doing a piece of work. I stopped advertising for a year, but I'm going to go back to it in the summer because it's important not to let those, I think those percentages show that people really love my pieces, but I need to do more work on bringing more customers in. So I've halted it for a bit to focus on my design direction. And now I want to go back to bringing more people in and growing the business. So it's a bit of a, that those they, my consultant has reliably informed me that although those proportions look really good, you need to make sure that you're bringing in lots of new people as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are two sides of it. It tells you're doing things right, that people are happy with what they got and they like want to buy again. But yeah, it also, the percentage could be high because there aren't any new people coming in.
To, exactly. You know, as well. Yeah, it's nice. I do look at it. And every season, it's lovely to see the people who are buying for the first time. But as long as you always realize, like, you're doing something, you know, with thought. So whether it's actively stopping advertising to go, I am going to be putting my budget behind, for example, creative direction or something like that, then I don't mind. As long as it's intentional, that's the main thing. Mm-hmm. You can't do everything all at once.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. So with kind of like budgeting as you're growing the business, like what has kind of been your thought process? Sounds like you're very intentional about for this season, I'm going to focus on this and like put my budget behind this. What goes into kind of those decisions of what that overall direction is and where you're going to invest your time and money?
Well, so far it's just been sort of tinkering with the dials to make sure that my cost price is as good as it can be without cutting corners, and that every time I need to invest in something, whether it's fabric or whether it's just general like admin stuff that I need to run the business, I'm always making a smart choice. But I'm getting to the stage now where my collections are starting to make enough that I then have nice net profit left over, but there's nothing really exciting to do with that money at the moment. It's not the time where you start taking out and paying yourself dividends, and it's not the time where you start investing in staff. At the moment, it's just buying more stock, because I think the sort of bottleneck for me at the moment is that my stuff sells out too quickly, but you've obviously got to have the money to put behind it. And this collection that I just had was the complete turning point for me. So everything had been going sort of, each collection was about 20% bigger than the last one. And then the last collection that I launched in October was, it made us more on launch night than my last collection had done in the entire 6 month period.
Wow.
So it was just, I was completely, in fact, it ended up being really stressful. Like it was completely unexpected. Like I was over the moon, mm-hmm. but just completely
like, now what do I do?
Yeah, I know exactly. Now what do I do? I had no stock left to sell, so I had to do this panic restock. And then, yeah, it's just been crazy. But that was the one that enabled me to go, now I have to just buy more. So I'm doing about double this for this new collection that's coming up. And then hopefully that will do well and I can buy even more for the next one. So it's just a little bit of like a bit more of a boost, you know, mm-hmm. you've got to get yourself off the ground and then you can start thinking, what am I going to do with the profits? Am I going to invest in marketing? So yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm making all of this sound so boring, but so much
no,
of business
I think
is
it's
just
so
really
interesting.
Smart, really smart, sensible decisions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So is it the spring summer 24 collection? You're buying double the stock that you did for the October 23 collection.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. That's a big jump, but it sounds like your customers are waiting for it. So.
Yeah, definitely. And it's things like if you buy more, then everybody who wants to buy their size, you know, say take, for example, last season, if you bought, you know, say 50 of a piece and you've got to divide that between sizes, but then you've got, say, double that number of people who wanted to buy a certain size, the more you can put behind it, then regardless of what size someone wants to buy, there's the opportunity for them to buy it. And I think as soon as people are waiting for a restock, the chances of them coming back and buying it seems to go down. You really want to capture mm-hmm. them on launch night because you've built them up for that, and not stick them on a wait list to buy it sort of 2-3 months later. So I hope that this will mean that everyone who wants to buy on launch night can, and then I can continue to sell throughout the season. That's the plan anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds like a great plan. I know launch nights have been kind of a roller coaster for you over the years. You're shaking your head already. So, what have been some of the things that you've learned from that? And yeah, what have launches looked like? It sounds like they've gone amazingly, but behind the scenes, what has been going on?
Yeah, I really love the marketing side of things. So I have a lot of fun in the, say, 6 weeks leading up to a launch where I do gradually building hints and teasers, but I don't actually give loads away until I do this big week of reveals. And then directly after that, everyone's able to go to the website and buy. My biggest trouble has been that I was set up on a WooCommerce, a WordPress website, which is because my original designer loved the way that you could make it look. It's much more open if you're a designer and you like the aesthetic side of things, but it's very clunky. It wasn't well built. And for the number of people I have landing on my website on a launch night, I would say crashed almost every time. Like people can't, like pages aren't loading. Everyone's on there, like trying to get through to checkout and it's really sluggish. And then things have sold out by the time they've got through. It's just been, and I'm behind the scenes sometimes crying. I cried last season. It was so stressful because there's been so much build up. Trying desperately to get things to work, but without the technical ability myself to sort it out. And then after the launch night, you end up having a terrible night's sleep worrying about it. And then the next day, you've got like 150 orders to pack by yourself in one day. And it's got too much for me, to be honest. So I'm changing things around a bit. And this coming launch, I'm splitting it into two. So I'm going to do the same collection, but launch half the styles in 1 month and half of them next month, and give myself a day's grace after the launch to pack them. And the other big change I'm making is I'm moving my website to Shopify. So I'm having it built at the moment, and that will get rid of all of my server issues. So I'm really hoping, partly for my sake, but mostly really for my customer, like they shouldn't have this kind of stress every single season just to buy something. Like it's nerve-wracking enough wondering whether they're going to be able to get their hands on something, let alone how long it's going to take them on the website. So I'm really happy to be able to do it.
Yeah, I hope everything like works out smoothly then for the it sounds like you've like done the research to find out like, okay, how do we solve this problem? How are we going to move forward from this? But yeah, I can't imagine how stressful that would be. I mean, even in my business, so I also use WordPress for my website. And I switched hosting providers at the end of last year, and already like that was just like a whole mess of things, and like I broke the podcast feed in doing that, and it was like 24 hours of panic of like, oh no, what did I do? Did I just delete, 80 something episodes of this? And my husband's like trying to help me figure it out because he is techie, and we finally sorted it out. And yeah, now it's like slow again because there's like too much traffic on there, so I need to upgrade like back-end stuff of mine as well. And I don't even do launches, so I can't
You just
imagine
feel
how
like your
much
hands.
more so like having all of that in one day to deal with.
Yes, I was going to say it's not just the fact that you feel helpless. It's also the fact that you're massively on show. You've been building up to it. Like your work for the last 6 months has been working on this collection, and it feels like it's all gone up in flames on this one night. And you're just very aware of letting people down. And every season I've tried to either put more hosting power behind it or change server providers or do sort of back-end tech stuff, and then been saying to people it's going to be fine this time, it's going to be fine, and then it hasn't been fine. But they've been lovely, my customers, and I think because I'm so open about what's going wrong and what I'm doing about it, they've just seen somebody who's figuring things out as they go. See what I mean?
Yeah, that's great that everyone has been like really supportive, even if there was hiccups and things. Yeah. So with each of the like at what collection did your business kind of like start to turn a profit on the collection? So I know now you said you're getting some profit and you're kind of investing that wisely in different areas, buying more stock, but how many collections did it take to get to that point where you were profitable?
This is such a good question. So I launched in June 2021, and I launched three collections in that 6 month period to the end of that year, and
That's a
all
lot.
of those lost money. The next year, I did two collections in 2022. Both of those collections made gross profit. So they paid for themselves, but they didn't cover business costs. And then last year, SS23, so my spring summer last year, broke even. So it paid for the business running costs and itself, but didn't make any leftover. And then the collection that I've just done made a decent amount of net profit. So now I'm sort of, that's what I mean. Like, now I feel like I've actually got a business rather than an expensive hobby, because it's only gonna get better. But it's, you know, it just sounds like you said at the beginning, like it all looks so glamorous, but behind the scenes, it's all of this business stuff and staring at spreadsheets and drilling down on all the numbers. Like, that's what gets you there. And it's been really satisfying to see it start paying off.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. And congratulations to get to that point. I'm sure like makes it worth it.
Definitely, yeah.
So does this include like, are you paying yourself a salary, or is this just kind of like overhead running the business admin? It's covering that, but not like covering paying you.
It pays me a very basic director payroll, which is not a livable salary. It's a few hundred pounds each month. And that's all included in my business running costs. But my hope is that next year I can pay myself back all the money that I put in to start the business up, so just to have my savings back. And you know, as soon as you've got something, because it's all the little things that you put on hold as a business owner that you don't talk about too much on Instagram, but you know, even the little things, you know, weirdly, I mean, ironically, buying clothes for myself is something that, you know, I don't do much anymore now. So, but then you know, it's so rewarding, and I think I'm going to look forward to doing that even more when it happens. And we've got quite a big year this year. We're moving house and getting married and things. So it's all coming around at the
Congratulations.
right time. Yeah.
Do you wear the shortlist a lot?
I don't wear the shortlist at all. And I felt really bad about it in the past, but I have spoken about it. It's because I'm so in the thick of the business at the moment. I'm the model. I do it all day, every day on my own. And it feels like too much to then be the poster girl for the shortlist outside of work. So much as I love my clothes, I'm proud of them, but I haven't got to the point where I want to put them on when I'm in my spare time. And I feel like that it feels like a thing that you should be guilty about. But I can't explain it unless you wear a business, like physically feel like you're carrying it all of the time. Wearing the clothes as well feels, I don't know, maybe like too much for me at the moment.
No, that totally makes sense, and I wouldn't feel guilty about that. I mean, I think for some people, it's great and they love wearing the clothes that they make or their brand makes, but then I can totally see of it's harder to kind of relax and turn off from the business that you're living and breathing it all day, and then to like wear it in the evening or, you know, wear on the weekends, you'd still be thinking about work. I could see how that would just feel
Yeah.
like you need some time away from the brand.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't see it as any different from me not going on my business Instagram at weekends or in the evenings, because sometimes you just need that separation. And I think when you run a business, it's so easy to be thinking about work when you're in bed at night. So just to give myself like some time off, I think that's probably, yeah, it's the best way I can describe it, but I always feel like it's going to reflect badly on me and how I feel about my pieces, but it's really not the case at all.
Well, good. So one thing from our conversation a few years ago that I thought was really such a cool idea is you had mentioned how you write kind of a letter in the fall of kind of a snapshot of the business and how things are going and how like the things that you're worried about or excited about and just how you're feeling about the business. And then the next year you'll read that letter and write a new one. So now that you've had several more years kind of under your belt in the business, what has it been like going back and reading those letters? And you know, has your mindset or thoughts about the business, how has that changed over the years?
Oh, it's so good. And do you know what? I find it really difficult not to look at them before the date. Like, I always feel so tempted to go and look back
So
because I
you
always.
don't look them at them at all until the next year. Okay, so it's like a
Not
time
at all.
capsule.
Yeah, I'm really good about this because I know that it'll make it so much more worthwhile. But so I write them in the September, which is just before my autumn winter collection launches. And it's just fascinating because I think It's so easy, however far you come, to then just look at how far you have to go. But if you look back, and I make sure that I write the kind of things that I'm worrying about and wondering about, and you can look back at past problems and think how, oh, I managed to solve that, or this is so different now. And there is something about that makes you realize all the work that's gone in and how much further it's taken you. So, I mean, that one that I'm going to be reading this year is going to be the one I wrote before I had my massive turning point collection. So I think by the time I get to September, I'm going to feel worlds ahead. And I really recommend anyone who's listening, if you could take one thing away, I would do the letter thing. It's such a nice thing to do.
Yeah, it's such a cool idea. I need to start doing that because I imagine that would just feel so amazing to, like, it's a way to see how far you've come and celebrate those milestones that maybe at the time you couldn't appreciate, or it was just around the corner and you didn't see it and just felt so, like, in the weeds about something. But then you've kind of built this system in to be able to look back and go like, oh yeah, I figured that out. Like, good for me. And look what happened in this year. So.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I personally love journaling, but for somebody who finds that too much of a burden to do all the time, just to do it this one day a year, I think you'd really see the benefit.
So cool. So, is there anything that you've been trying in the business recently or experimenting with that maybe feels a little bit risky, but you're seeing how it goes?
That is such an interesting question. I mean, kind of, but again, they're not things that I can talk loads about. For example, I'm looking at moving to another manufacturer, which is hopefully going to enable me to bring my prices down a little bit more. I hope so anyway, and just put me in a better position for scaling. I really get into the point where I need somebody to help me with production management, and this is one place where they've got it's someone who's based in the UK, but then they have a suite of factories that they work with. And it's things that will enable me to sort of work more on the business and give away more of the stuff that takes time. So there's that. I'm looking into fulfillment centers. I pack everything myself at the moment, and it feels really frightening to give that away, but I can see that that's kind of going to be a real boon if it all works out to free up my time.
Yeah, especially if you're ordering twice the stock, you're gonna like that's a
Oh my,
lot of time spent packing.
just to have it descend on your house, honestly, it's so intense. And the final thing is, I mentioned we're moving house this year, and I finally want to have a shortlist sort of HQ, so a proper office that feels shortlist, in color palette, all designed to be a really nice filming space. I feel whenever I'm on film, it's in my living room or in the spare bedroom where I have my desk. And it feels like the business is so much further along now than to have me working at a desk in a bedroom. So I really like the idea of having a very on-brand office, have my company logo in there and be able to present to people from there. And when they think of the shortlist, they can think of that. So that's quite
Envision the
exciting as
space.
well.
Yeah, that's super exciting. So, are you imagining this like HQ being a still in your house or like a separate like building or office that you're gonna get?
So for now, I'm just going to have it in my house because I think until I actually need to get help in, there's no need for me to have an office. And I think if I do fulfillment, I will ha then have all my stock in a different warehouse anyway. But most of the work that I do is sat at a computer, it's at a desk. And I think that the only way for me to show that to people well is to have a setup that looks a bit nicer. Me just on my laptop in a bedroom is very difficult to film, and I feel like it's held me back from sharing more of the behind the scenes. Even things like, I mean, you can tell from here, the lighting is really poor, and little things like that seem small will just allow me to like do a bit more on Instagram. I really love talking to my customers, and it's why I've got a good relationship with them, but it held me back from really sharing that, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I totally agree with that. A few years ago, we moved houses, and my office is a room in our house. And for the first time, I really kind of intentionally set up my office, like my dad helped me build a desk because it's kind of an odd shape and it, like, old 1930s house. So, like, to make a desk that really, like, fit perfectly in the space, and I got to, you know, pick out the colors and set up some shelving and put, you know, some of my supplies and decorations on it to, like, make the space feel more just, you know, more comfortable, more functional, more pretty to work in. And it makes kind of your mood throughout the day as you're in that space so much better than if you're, like, in a space that isn't inspiring to you or doesn't have all the things you need or isn't as comfortable, so.
You're exactly right. Like, a lot of it's to do with how you feel, and the idea of being in what feels like a mini HQ rather than in something that is just like an afterthought. And I really like the idea of sharing the journey of making it over with my followers and things. I just think it's a nice thing to do. And for them, a lot of them love the fact that they're seeing, like, the entrepreneur journey and to see somebody who's actually been able to transition to a proper office. All of those things are nice for them to see.
Yeah. Yeah, so what are some of the things in the business that, like, you love the most that you never see yourself giving up? It seems like you really enjoy kind of the business side and the operations, and yeah, what are those things?
Yeah, so I love the business stuff, I love numbers, I love spreadsheets, and I also love the marketing side of things. So managing my Instagram, I love writing emails, and I put loads of effort into making sure that those are things that people want to open. And copywriting is really good fun. The tone of voice of the brand is all my work, and it feels a little bit like a creative side to balance all the business stuff. And all of that is just in my comfort zone, and I think things like design and production management are all things that I've had to learn, and I can see somebody who would be better at doing those eventually, and it'd be nice to hand those over. But don't know, it's nice, the idea of, as the business grows and you take on people who are really good at what they do, to then still be, you know, overseeing it and learning more about the way they do those things. I feel I'm interested in all areas of business, but don't want to be the one hands on the ground, like, for all of it.
Kind of the creative brand leadership and operations side of things.
That's it.
I can totally tell that you like the copywriting and marketing side, because it's so fun to follow you on Instagram, and I feel like your business voice is very, like, you have a good balance of personally connecting with your followers and customers. Like, it's your face who's speaking on stories, you're the model for your pieces, so, like, you share kind of the personal side and the entrepreneur journey, as you were saying, but it doesn't feel like it's only you. Like, the brand feels like it has a voice of its own and a personality of its own, and a very well thought out one. It's kind of cheeky and funny and, like, down to earth and relatable, and I really enjoy reading all your posts.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah, it's, when I started out, all I heard was, don't act like a business when you're just a person, and don't say we when it's I. But I just had a vision of, I wanted to create a brand. I didn't want to be Laura Briggs, who makes petite fashion. I saw the shortlist, and I hope that I talk more as myself on stories, and then I do stuff that's clearly the shortlist, and my customers definitely get it, and I feel like it works for me, so I'm just carrying on with it for now.
Yeah, no, that's a good distinction, because I've heard that advice as well, and I think that's good advice for people who are, like me, I'm a solo business owner, and I'm a service provider, so, like, I'm not selling product, like, I don't have a brand with its own kind of face and personality, like, it's me. Like, yeah. If you hire me, it's me. And so, like, for me to say we would feel kind of weird. But in your case, like you said, you kind of have these distinct buckets of, like, you are talking to people as the founder, or when it's you, but, like, when the brand is talking to people. And I think you do a really good job with that.
Thank you.
So what have been some of the most exciting things about scaling the business so far, and maybe what have been some of the growing pains outside of the launch website server?
So I think the scariest thing at the moment is, having to do new things, like when I spoke about moving from my manufacturer to Poland, I said I had absolutely nothing to lose. And now looking at moving my manufacturer again is more like you not having all your eggs in one basket and having to look at more streamlined and more formal ways of doing things. My Polish factory is fabulous. They have really good level of workmanship, but they do things in a very sort of old school way, shall I say, that I can't see working quite as well as I scale. So it's, you know, looking at putting new procedures in place and everything getting a little bit more official. And I do find that that's scary because I haven't worked in retail before and I'm having to learn all of it. And I trust that I can do it, but it's, you know, it feels like I'm in another learning stage at the moment. But the good stuff is, oh, there's just so much more potential for everything, even stuff like, you know, once you've got a little bit more money in the business, you can think about handing things over at the moment only to freelancers. But, you know, if there's a project that you really see, you know, would help your business or delight your customers, you can give that to somebody. So at the moment, I'm looking at, you know, doing a update of, you know, all the content on my website and obviously redesigning it. And you can really go in with somebody and say, I want this to be better. What more features can we add? Like, how can I bring some newness into this? And that stuff that I don't always have time to look at everything in that level of detail. And once you've got a little bit more money, you can just start upgrading everything. And I hope that it's more exciting to customers as well. It certainly feels more exciting to me.
Yeah, that's so fun. So, as you're scaling, what are some of the things that you're kind of like, where do you see the short list going in the near future and maybe in the long term as well? Like, what is the goal you're working on as you're scaling?
I would like to be a seven-figure turnover business. I don't see myself as being a household name. I don't, like, within my soul, like, that isn't something that, like, speaks to me. I'm not bothered about having, you know, stores all over the world, but I really feel like I'm just passionate about the shortlist and I can see how great it could be and how happy it could make lots of women. And I love the idea of the economy of scale and being able to bring my prices to this real sweet spot where it's, you know, a treat and it's luxury and it's premium, but it's still slightly more accessible to more people. And I just want to work with a small team of really smart, hopefully a mix of men and women, but I like the idea of like a, you know, having a more women leadership team, lots of clever people and, you know, feeling very motivated and inspired. Like, that is the most fun part about running a business. And I just love to work with more people who are really skilled. And I feel that's what I get most excited about.
Yeah, it's such a great vision, and I can totally see you achieving that. I feel like you're very purposeful with your decisions, and like you know where you're going. The brand has a clear voice and personality, and yeah, you've kind of got all the things in place on the business side to like work towards this. So it'll be exciting
Thank
to see
you. Oh, that's
when
really
you make
nice of you.
it.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. So I have one more question that I ask everyone at the end of the interview, which is if you could communicate one value to the world through the clothes that you make, what would it be?
Can't remember what I said. I feel like I might have said this last time, but I'm going to say fun. Did I say that one last time?
I think you said a variation of that, yeah.
It did. Maybe that's a good thing because it shows that my values are true. I don't know. But I really mean it. Like, you know, we're just talking about the voice and everything. But I just think, you know, at the end of the day, it's just dresses. Like, it's fashion. Like, it's not going to change the world, but it does make you feel great. And in every part of the shortlist, I'm ultimately trying to add like something fun and something interesting to somebody's day. And if I can do that with the clothing as well, like that's all I ask for. Spread a little bit of joy. Yeah, I'd be happy with that.
Cool. Yep, it's so cool. And clothes are fun, and I can see kind of like the fun even weaving into your copywriting and the dresses that you make and everything. So I'm sure customers feel the same. This has been so fun, Laura, to catch up with you and hear everything that's been going on in your business the past 2 years, and huge congratulations on everything that you've been able to accomplish. And exciting to see where you and the shortlist will go in the future. Where can people find out more about the shortlist and follow everything you're doing online?
you can follow the shortlist at Shop the Shortlist on Instagram, and it's shoptheshortlist.co.uk to find our website.
Perfect. I'll put links to those in the show notes, and this has been lovely. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. If you'd like more episodes and resources like this about growing a fashion business that fits your customer, lifestyle, and values sent straight to your inbox, you can sign up for my email list at howfittingpatterns.com/newsletter. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for the next episode of How Fitting.